Brings me great joy to be here this evening and for us to all to come together. And as we do so, it is on the weekend of Memorial Day weekend, in which we honor those who have paved the way for our existence and our prosperity and everything good that we have. And that should definitely include the guru lineage that we follow, beginning with Jesus and Babaji, and then to Lari Mahasya, Swami Sri Yukteswarji, Master, Mother. And we also include saints and sages of all religions, because this is a universal path. And as such, it includes all those in this world, by whatever name they may call the infinite, that they have attained the consciousness of that one. And so we find kindred spirits in every part of the world, in every religion. You can go to any mosque, any temple, any church, any cathedral, and find there a few illumined faces. Those who are lit up with something new, different, alive. Their eyes sparkle. And you recognize there's someone who's awakened. Awakened to the divine spirit within them and all about them. In particularly, we think of India and the great science of religion that has been brought to us, in our case primarily by Paramahansa Yogananda. And that one of the great inventions or discoveries of these yogis from ancient India was the connection between mind, body, and breath. And that by going within the laboratories of their own experience, they discovered that they could make tremendous changes and progress by focusing their attention upon the breath. And of course, what has been given to us through Kriya Yoga is the circulating of the life force through the spine and the brain, in combination with the breath and the use of the mind. And in this way, we can greatly enhance our spiritual progress. I would like to read from Paramahansa Yogananda's commentary on the Gita. And it is Arjuna speaking and saying, this comes from verse 33. O Krishna, owing to my restlessness, I do not behold the permanent enduring effect of the equalizing yoga thou hast related to me. And Master's commentary is, at times, the yogi feels his invading restlessness to be stronger than the restlessness-dissolving power of yoga. He should then patiently pray to God and tell that intoxication of delusive habit wears off, and he becomes free. Arjuna, the devotee, prays within, O God, thou slayer of Madhu, the demon of ignorance, the yoga that I have been practicing has given me some tranquility. Yet I do not see its lasting benefit. Restlessness still invades my mind. The novice yogi, even after repeatedly experiencing peace during the practice of yoga, may yet be confronted by restless thoughts suddenly springing to the surface of consciousness from long hidden subconscious sources. This invasion should not influence the yogi to abandon yoga through disbelief in the power to produce a lasting tranquility. He will find that the subconscious habits of restlessness will gradually cease to appear in a mind that becomes strongly fortified by the habit of meditation. O yogi, if by one or two divings into the ocean of divine perception you do not find the pearls of God communion, do not blame the ocean as lacking in the divine presence. Rather, find fault with your skill in diving. Again and again, sink into the ocean of meditation and seize there the pearls of blessed communion. In this stanza, we find even an ideal devotee like Arjuna, who has many times experienced the perfect calmness and equilibrium of yoga, to be harboring doubts about the ability of yoga permanently to banish mental disharmony, instead of finding fault with the quality of his own meditation. And he continues, "Verily, the mind is unsteady, tumultuous, powerful, obstinate. O Krishna, I consider the mind as difficult to master as the wind." The devotee in deep despair says, "O Krishna, how may one control the mind who is ever restless, like the volatile breath in spite of yoga practice?" When the bad habit of restlessness is conquered by the stronger habit of tranquility that is acquired by patient, enthusiastic, long-continued yoga practice, the devotee finally finds the answer to his question. The yogi who has often experienced the divine bliss of meditation should remain watchful against the sudden appearance of material desires and worldly moods. Care should be observed. Care should be observed lest the devotee stop practicing yoga through the influence of misleading subconscious impulses that mar tranquility and arouse interest in material pleasures. Instead of giving strength to his abnormal nature of restlessness, the yogi should strive to recall his true quiescent nature as manifested during yoga practice and should strengthen it by deeper meditation. Arjuna compares the mind to the wind. Here, the deeper the meaning of wind is breath, for the changeableness and waywardness of the human mind is ineluctably bound up with man's breathing patterns. The glory of India's ancient sages is that they discovered the liberating truth: to control the breath is to control the mind. To control the breath is to control the mind. The ordinary man may try unsuccessfully to restrain his breath by unscientifically holding it in the lungs. The Kriya Yogi, on the other hand, is able to oxygenate his blood scientifically and thus to remove from it most of the carbon dioxide. He requires little breath. He is the real way of controlling the breath. It is impossible to control the breath by unscientific way of holding it in the lungs. The discomfort of forcibly withholding the breath proves that the act is injurious to health. During the forcible withholding of breath in the lungs, the oxygen is used up, resulting in greater accumulation of carbon dioxide in the air tubes. This causes pressure, discomfort, and pain in the lungs. No one should hold the breath in the lungs to the point of discomfort. Similarly, the ordinary man who tries to forcibly control the mind finds himself unsuccessful. But when he practices the scientific method of Kriya Yoga and learns to withdraw his life force from the 5 sense telephones, his mind is automatically freed from sensations and from conscious and subconscious thoughts accruing to those sensations. The aspirant should not be discouraged by the initial failure in most difficult art of mind control. By scientific yoga, the beginner finds the right way to free the mind from all conscious and subconscious restlessness. Of course, much depends on one's intensity, zeal, and continuity. These will help the mind to grow into a habit of peace and to rise above the unnatural mortal habit of restlessness that is rooted in the identification of consciousness with the bodily senses. And so we see here what a tremendous potentiality is held out by Master, who used to say that breathlessness is deathlessness. And Kriya Yoga and our Hong Sa meditation and chanting of the name of God are 3 tremendous ways to help achieve this stability, this tranquility that happens within the breath and the body and the mind. Another great mechanism was given to me while I was at Cloud Mountain, and that is with the clearing and the charging breath. And I thought tonight that we would go over the clearing breath and we would utilize it and deepen our understanding of it. And then afterwards we can have some questions and answers, if you would like, about the path in general. But this idea of going deeper into the breath, you know, all these many years that I've practiced Kriya Yoga, and I still discover new facets to this tremendously powerful method for lifting the consciousness above the things of the body, the things of the world, and entering into the divine consciousness. But also, on a daily basis, I use this clearing breath. And it begins like this, as you think of stilling your mind and coming into that still state. Perhaps there's something that calls to you. Perhaps you've just eaten a meal and your stomach is a little bit full. Perhaps you're having pain in a part of your body. Perhaps your mind is preoccupied with some ideas, some daydreaming that's going on within the mind. And all of these are amenable to the clearing breath. So in the clearing breath, you think of the area that is distracting you, and if there is no distraction, then you don't have to try to think up anything. Just remain in that perfect equanimity and peace. But if there is something, if there's some content, either of the body or of the world, or of some deep subconscious trait, then you can readily use the clearing breath. So as you're aware of whatever body distraction that you may have, perhaps you have some pain or some tiredness, some difficulty with the body, and you think of that area of your body and you wrap, think of it as a bubble around the affected area of your body. Now, this bubble is the aura, is the electromagnetic field that is around if it's a painful area, say, or if your stomach is a little bit overfull from dinner. Then you just, you sense the aura around it. Now, the aura might be quite a bit larger than your stomach, say, for instance, or if you have a painful area, the edges of that painful area can go a lot further out even than your physical body. Sometimes we have such a feeling of pain in the body that the aura extends out to be, in our mind's eye, as large as this world or even larger. And so it's important that you go to the outer edges, you find the outer edges of that affected area. And as you breathe in and your lungs expand, that area begins to, energetic area or the bubble expands along with your lungs. And then when you breathe out and your lungs contract, then that bubble of energy around the affected area slightly contracts. If you're having a daydream about something, and it just seems to keep coming back to you again and again, you can sense the aura around that thought, around that daydream. If you see yourself within a daydream, you can wrap that bubble around yourself or your energy field. You can wrap it around the entire daydream itself. And as you breathe in, you expand the bubble around that. As you breathe out, you contract the bubble. If you start with one area, and then your attention is drawn to another area, you don't need to fight that. Just follow it. What you do, though, is you wrap that bubble around that new area. You sense the outer edges. What is most common is people make the bubble too small. They think of, oh, that small part of my body there. and they contract that bubble too small and it doesn't move easily. They start to struggle with it. When you notice that, just simply expand the size of the bubble, and just, you can do it in your mind, and when you get out to the outer edges, it'll easily breathe with you. It'll easily expand and contract with your own breathing. As a general tonic, if there's nothing in particular that's calling to you, as a general tonic for your whole body, mind, spirit connection, you can sense the aura around your entire body. And it may be arm's length, about arm's length out all around you. It may extend out further than that. Just find the outer edges, and when you breathe in, the aura expands. The energy field around you expands. When you breathe in, it slightly contracts. It doesn't need to be exaggerated. There are many times when you may just simply identify with this world itself, or even further out than that. And again, all you do is you breathe with it. So if it's with identifying with this world itself, you'll feel yourself going out to the outer edges of the electromagnetic field around this world, and that you're breathing in rhythm and within time with your own body and with this world. Sometimes we're aware that there's a lot of difficulty in this world, and we would like to help this world. And you may do so by using this clearing breath for the entirety of the world. So whether it's for a physical difficulty within, a mental difficulty of something that keeps calling to you, or whether you take it as a general tonic for this body, or for this world, or even beyond. And as you breathe, and you feel that energy field expand, and as you breathe out, you feel it contract, and then just notice. Notice what the effect is on you. If your mind is then drawn to something new, that means that area has been resolved. And then some other area is calling to you, and you just let your mind go to the new area. When you practice this properly, you should feel a great easing in your body and in your mind. An increasing state of tranquility. And in fact, it can begin to set your spirit free, where before you may have felt more bound by the body, by the mind. Now you feel yourself released. You may still be aware that you have a body. You still may be aware that you have some thoughts, but they don't have the hold on you. Now you feel yourself more and more expansive spirit. And yet you can continue as long as you have a breath. You can continue the clearing breath. And even if you identified with this entire universe and felt it breathing, and you can go even beyond that. Again, if something isn't moving and you expand out that circle. Likelihood you're too tight. And if you get out a little bit too far, you'll sense that too. So you can just experiment with it. You don't have to fight anything here. You don't have to fight your thoughts. You don't have to fight physical pain. You don't have to try to send it away. In fact, you don't want to do that. That tends to get you into a power struggle with it. You're just asking it to breathe with you. If it's a painful area, of course, we would like it to go away. But if you get into trying to force it to go away, it'll increase the tension rather than bringing you greater peace and equanimity. You might find that the energy naturally rises up in your spine, takes you into the higher centers and a greater field of expansiveness. And that's perfectly fine. And as long as you have a breath, just simply use it, expanding and contracting. So as you continue to practice, listen to what Krishna responds to Arjuna. The Blessed Lord said, O mighty armed Arjuna, undoubtedly the mind is fickle and unruly, but by yoga practice and by dispassion, O son of Kunti, the mind may nevertheless be controlled. This is my word. Yoga is difficult of attainment by an ungoverned man. But he who is self-controlled will, by striving through proper methods, be able to achieve it. And so Krishna assures us that by proper methods, we can enter into a deeper state of peace, a deeper state of tranquility, Yoga means union with God, union with the infinite consciousness, the all-expansive, all-powerful, all-knowing consciousness that resides deeply within each of us. Jesus said that my kingdom is not of this world, but it is the kingdom of heaven that is to be found within and here and now. That was the truth then and is the truth now. So do not be discouraged in your practice, but go deeper. control. Continue in this practice. But if there are questions, thoughts, observations that you have, this would be a good time to talk them over.
I discovered two things.
Uh-huh.
One is it automatically makes your diaphragm work.
Mm-hmm.
And it automatically brings on Hoksa.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Better than okay.
Okay.
So yes, as your breath relaxes and your mind relaxes with it, that's the body-mind connection. Your diaphragm will, it's natural for our diaphragm to be in action with the breath. Mm-hmm. We don't always breathe naturally. When we get stressed and we just use the top 10%, the top portion of our lungs, stop using the diaphragm. So to reestablish that pattern brings about the greatest amount of health, physically, mentally, elsewhere. And of course, Hong Sa's.
Yeah, just automatically starting.
Great.
Just a natural.
Great.
That came with it.
Mm-hmm. The nice thing about this clearing breath is we don't have to fight the mind. We don't have to try to even govern it in the sense of trying to think or not think of certain things. Just simply go with whatever is drawing our attention. And then apply the clearing breath to it. And when we clear away a certain amount of the debris, you might say, then something, a practice of Hong Sa can come in so easily, so naturally.
It's funny, when you said that, I thought of Swamiji and sweeping.
Sweeping? Yeah. Swamiji, of course, had that wonderful story about the yogi who was sitting in his cave and gone out the day before, and he got back, and the next day as a devotee a woman came to see him, and she sat at his feet for some time, and he didn't say anything and he didn't respond to her, and she started watching her watch and time going by, and finally she thought, well, I don't think he's going to respond to me today, so I'm going to go. And just about as she was getting up to go, he started to show some signs of life. And then he noticed that she was there, and he says, oh, you have come. She said, yes, she says, but I was sitting here for so long, I didn't think that you were going to respond to me. And he said, yes, yes, he said, yesterday I went into town, and there were certain disturbing kinds of images, so I've been sweeping, sweeping everything out and cleaning everything out. What good can I do to you if I'm filled up with restlessness and these different kinds of thoughts? First, I have to get my own house in order. So then she was content that it was all right, and she got her answers. Sweeping and clearing breath is a wonderful way to sweep out. We oftentimes don't realize how much we're holding. Holding on to thoughts, expectations, what life is supposed to look like, how unhappy we are with things, just the whole long list of things. It takes a lot of life energy to hold it. And when we do the clearing breath, it releases our attachment to those things naturally.
Do you have any principle for how long you may do it in one?
As long as you would like, as long as you need to sweep. When you come into
a still state. There's nothing more that calls to you. There's no daydreams, there's no body pain, there's nothing that is demanding your attention, and you slip into that perfect state of equanimity. Then reside in that. Just simply be in that still state. And perhaps the breathing becomes very, very almost not noticeable. And it can even come into that state of complete stillness where you're not breathing in or you're out. And you may not realize it at first, and then suddenly you take a breath and you think, oh, it's been a long time since I've even taken a breath. That still state is what allows the superconscious mind, that usually we're filled up with the conscious, and if the conscious tries to get quiet, then the subconscious starts coming up. But this allows that perfect radiance of the superconscious mind to begin to illumine us. And we don't even always know how much we're uplifted. We're in that still state. It feels so natural to us. Until we start to come down a little bit into ordinary consciousness, and then we think, oh my, it's really in an uplifted state. And yet while we're there, it almost escapes our attention. And it is because it's such a natural place. It's where we belong. It's what we yearn for. So to find that still state, to continue, Master used to say that he would always meditate until he touched God, until he felt God's presence. And so it's different than putting time in on the clock and saying, okay, I've meditated for so long. And that's a different criteria, that you meditate until you've actually felt like you've touched God and God has touched you. So if you can imagine just doing it until you come into that absolute, complete, still state. And how powerful that feels, how pure it feels, how in touch it puts you with all creation. It doesn't isolate you. Sometimes we think about these yogis who are going into your meditation blanket, your meditation room, and you're isolating, you're cutting yourself off from the world. But really, when you enter into that higher state of consciousness, you feel your connection with everything and everyone. There's a kind of intimacy that's generated in that that can't be duplicated through socialization, through getting together with other people. And it's all done wordlessly, but so profoundly.
I'm struggling with your statement about the breathless state being so subtle. Why?
Because it does feel natural. Oftentimes we think of knowing God or realizing or self-realization that, and it's our language sometimes, the ego dies and it's a state beyond the body, things like that. But when you're lifted up in that state and you have some awareness that you do have a body, okay, the body is there, but now the body occupies maybe 10%, maybe 5% of your awareness. 95% is feeling the spirit. You're just in all consciousness, all space. And then you think, well, that's nice, but you don't realize how nice it is, how powerful it is, until you start to come back into body consciousness and you compare it then. You think, oh, that was being in such an expansive place. And now I feel like I'm so contained and confined and imprisoned in this much smaller way of knowing. And it's the contrast that gives us a deeper appreciation for how great it is when we're in that expanded state. But it is, it feels so natural to be there. And of course, we want to stay there always.
And nothing can get it.
Until we're able to bring it with us. Until there is no more going in and out. But if we are focused on this physical consciousness, there's no break from the universal consciousness.
So you learn to carry it.
Yeah. And it's a purification of the mind. As the mind is purified, it's able to translate it into your human life, into human interactions. Now there's not, I'm in that state of consciousness, now I'm out of it. And I've come down in order to deal with this world. It's all one and continuous.
Kind of like the energy flow behind the brain.
Yes.
It's just constant.
It's constant. It's always there. But we're not always aware of it.
Yeah.
In this state, you're always aware of it. And it's consciously operating through you, through your brain, through your life energy, everything that you do. There's no separation in it.
Until we go to black.
Well, and we can get to the place where we never choose to pull the plug. I remember when I was surprised when Mother said, in her fully realized state, that she still had free will and she could choose not to do God's will. And I don't know why, but that struck me. And she said, I just choose never to not do God's will. So it becomes such a natural state for you. And whatever that attachment is that draws us out of it is now gone. And we would never think of attaching ourselves to anything that would draw us out of it.
How much of that is God's hand? How much of that is God's hand working through you, and how much is that you? Now the brain's getting involved in it.
It is, but it's a reasonable question. We wouldn't be able to do it if grace wasn't operating, because we know when we're uplifted, we can't do that ourselves. We can't just think ourselves into that kind of freedom, bliss, upliftment. Therefore, it's a power that's more than us, in our individual self. That's grace. And yet we must make the effort. We must be actively involved in this for grace to really achieve its highest goal. So it takes both, but ultimately we would say that we would get nowhere without God's grace, that we're not capable of creating that. We couldn't think ourselves into that state. And that's actually a test that comes along. Sometimes we think, did I just make that up? Did I just create that? Okay, try to create that. Try to make that up.
And you can't.
You can't. It's so far beyond anything that we could try to create. Even after we've touched it, we couldn't just make it up in our mind.
It starts with A and you don't know where it's at.
So that's actually a great test that comes along when you're testing these things out.
Yeah.
No, I couldn't make this up if I tried. So grace is absolutely, it all happens because of that. And yet, we would have to say, and yet I need to extend myself fully. I can block it, I can close the door. So that Jesus said, I stand at the door and knock, all those that open the door, I come in and sup with them and they with me. There's a communion that happens. But notice, he says, I stand at the door. You need to open the door. Mm-hmm. He knocks, but you need to open. Mm-hmm. There's that willingness that we have to show. And if we don't show that willingness, we may get lifted up occasionally by grace, but it won't become that permanent state.
Right.
That takes complete willingness on our part. And as I've told before, the story where I felt like I was wanting God and wanting God, and couldn't figure out why he was withholding himself from me. I was pulling so hard on that door handle until I looked down and I saw that my foot was propped up against the door. So I was pulling as hard as I could, but I was also keeping it closed.
You're fighting yourself.
Yes. The clearing breath can work tremendously to help resolve those paradoxes where we're fighting ourselves. We just simply ask ourselves, ask that part of ourselves to breathe. We just breathe with me. Not asking you to change or go away, just breathe with me. And then changes happen all of themselves.
That's when grief comes in. Because I think all of us know what happens when we restrict.
Yes.
We're
all pretty familiar with that.
I think we're pretty practiced at that one.
When we become so familiar with it, we don't even realize what we're doing.
Yeah.
So Sri Yukteswar gave the definition of God realization as ever new joy. So a fairly simple application. Are we in a state of ever new joy? If we are, then we're there. If we're not, we've closed the door somehow. And it may be so deeply familiar, we think, well, I'm not in pain and my life isn't terrible and things go along okay. But it's not. It's not. We haven't achieved the total goal yet. And that's where we can shake ourselves from the complacency and say, it's not just about things aren't terrible right now, or they're okay, or I'm enjoying life and things are all right. There's something more. And we recognize that the ego's tendency is to create a box around something and put a label on it and say, okay, I understand it. I know what meditation is. I've been meditating all this time. I just have this nice little bow on this box. We put it up on the shelf, and isn't that nice? And we haven't even begun to discover the potentiality that's encompassed in it. We have to recognize that's the ego's mind's nature, is to restrict and to define and to label. And then we feel like we have a handle. It makes us comfortable with it. We have to be willing to challenge ourselves to go to the next level. And if we don't, we just get into a staid kind of place that hopefully eventually we start to get restless about. But we can stay there for a very long time.
Complacency.
Yeah. Not really challenging ourselves to go deeper. To spend longer amounts of time in meditation. There's something about length of time that can't be replaced, can't be substituted. If we have our half an hour, 45 minutes, 1 hour of practice, we need to spend time at different times going deeper. 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. Once a month when we do, as a group, our six-hour meditation, Carla always says it's like taking a month-long vacation. She comes out of it. But it's not always easy for her either. Sometimes it's a struggle, but by the time you get to the end of that time, you feel rejuvenated, renewed. But if you don't put in the time, you don't get the results. Dr. Lewis talked about one time when he was meditating with Yogananda, and they were sitting by the ocean side. And they sat there for quite a long time. They were about there for 6 hours. Meditating, and Master is just completely still. He is completely immersed in God consciousness. Meanwhile, Dr. Lewis, who's quite fastidious and he dresses very nicely and always has his fedora on, vest, and he's a doctor, but the waves are starting to come a little closer as the tide is rising, and you know, out of one eye, he's kind of eyeing this up, and it's starting to get closer and closer as the 6 hours is moving on, and finally it's coming right up to them, you know, and then Master suddenly comes to him and says, "Doctor, we're about to get wet," you know, and up they go, and he struggled with himself so much, but after that time, he never struggled with long meditations, Dr. Lewis. Some grace happened there, that his mind got settled down, and that he entered into that. And there's a state of stillness that's so enticing, so wonderful, so nurturing. And then we realize we've been denying ourselves for all that time. We've not been getting that. Because we just stay on the surface and we don't go deeper. If we're going to make the progress, we must take the time.
I have a very bad habit of saying, "Oh, I've connected. Okay, now I can go."
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like a glance at somebody. And
it limits us.
It does. And it's one of those mental things that...
And I struggled for a long time. It seemed like I would get down so far, and suddenly I would just jet back up to the surface, and it was so fast, it was, whoa, what just happened? Not even conscious of, and then just wanting to get, okay, my meditation's done, just get up and go. And having to work through that and say, listen, this is not it. You know, something just happened there. And ultimately what I always saw is that would happen before I was ready to enter into a newer and deeper state of awareness. And that oppositional force would come up more powerful at that time. So oftentimes the times when we're feeling the least spiritual and the least calm, we're really standing on the precipice of something new. And if we can just hang in there, not keep showing up on the battlefield, and what I started doing is, instead of, even though I wanted to get up and start moving, I go right back in there and say, listen, something just happened here. I need to meet this and go beyond it. And if we don't do that, we can remain the rest of our life just oblivious of going any further. Seemingly doing all the things that we're supposed to be doing, but not getting the results. Not having ever new joy. Okay. So let's just close with an expansive consciousness. Perhaps you feel it fully, perhaps not, but in either case, I just want you to begin with your body and the aura around your body, about arm's length out, all around your body. And taking a couple of breaths with it and feeling the aura expanding and contracting. As you breathe in, your lungs expand. The bubble around you expands. Excuse me. And then in your mind's eye, I just want you to see this entire world as a bubble that's going through space. And that there is an aura as well, just like around your body, there's an aura around this world of world consciousness. And all the things that happens in this world, all the good things, the beautiful things, also the difficult things, the ugly things, it's all part of world consciousness. And as you touch in with this and go to the outer edges of the aura around this world, and then just breathing with this world, helping it to breathe,
So that when you breathe in, your lungs expand, your aura of this world expands. And when you breathe out, it contracts. And that perhaps with this, in your own mind, your own consciousness, you feel a kind of equanimity for this world, a kind of peace, a kind of resolution. And then just expanding out even further, and in your mind's eye, seeing this entire universe, as Master described it, as one of many island universes. And you see this entire universe in its vast immensity, but in spirit, it's like a tiny bubble in space. And as you breathe in, the aura of this universe expands. As you breathe out, it slightly contracts. And then, if it is within you, you can expand out even further into all space. And in all space, there's just this gentle sense, even though it has no strict boundaries or form, but there's this gentle sense of expansion and contraction, like the great being of God is breathing. And there's no absolute boundaries or form that goes with it. It's just the aliveness of everything that is. And you sense the great expansion. You can think of this tiny little bubble of a body and how much it needs to be crammed into this tiny little vessel. When in truth, you are an expansive spirit. And that you can learn to see that you can operate in this little body and remain free in the infinite spirit. That you do not need to sacrifice one in order to know the other. And even without fully knowing how to make this happen, that you can open yourself to its possibility and that grace can teach you precisely and exactly how to do this. And that my great desire for you, my great joy, is in your finding that spirit, that freedom. And never again having to feel that you have to sacrifice your universality for occupying the body's locality. You can be both human and divine, simultaneously and continuously. Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to the light. Pranams, I bow to the light within you.